The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
On this episode of Revelator, I welcome music guest Ryan Neff from the band Miss May I. Also covered the top movies, NCAA basketball championship, music news, beard implants, hot pockets at the massage parlor, and much, much more happening now on Revelator.
Delivering the goods at every freaking turn.
Welcome to Revelator. I'm your host, Ryan. Thanks for hanging out with me. Delivering the goods. And I tell you what, we got some good ones tonight. Not only do we have a great musical guest, Ryan Neff from the band Miss May I. Really excited to have these guys on. One, the new album comes out on April 29th. We get to play some new tracks off that new album and talk about, obviously, recording with Terry Date. And some of you who are in the music industry may recognize Terry Date as the guy who helped record Aster Creep 2000 for White Zombie. Recorded some material with Eminem, Pantera, Bring Me the Horizon. The list goes on there. So these guys are on their way up. They're doing their fourth album, and I'm pretty sure to have Ryan join us here a little later in the show. But let's jump right into a couple headlines here, right? You know, I've grown the beard. Mike, I think you've done the beard thing too. And, you know, I still do the goatee and stuff. And I ran across this thing about beards today. You know, I'm going to click on it and find out what this thing about bigger, thicker, fuller beards, you know, like, I don't know, maybe like rub some crap on my face or something, you know, I don't know, right? So anyway, no, this is like beard implants. I'm like, this can't be real, right? And I'm like, sure enough, it is a real thing. This doctor in Canada is actually providing this service for men who need to have richer, fuller beards. Maybe you just can't quite grow in. Maybe your beard's a little patchy, I guess, you know. For a mere $6,000, you too could have a beard just like Grizzly Adams. Am I missing something here? I don't know. I guess, you know, I always thought, you know, if a beard is supposed to be, and you're like, oh, I'm a man, I'm going to grow a beard. I'm going to grow a beard. You know, like I'm Al Borland from freaking Home Improvement or something, you know, like, now you're gonna have, like, you know, these hipster dudes like, well, I wanted a little bit more richer, fuller beard with my dead monks and brown ale, and I figured I would go spend a little extra money and really, really fool it. I mean, just really feel it. It's really full and soft and pretty. Now we have pretty full beards that are, I only paid $6,000. It's fine. Mike, you got a take on the beard implants, for Christ's sakes.
I do. Do they use ass hair as the filler?
I have no idea. And maybe it's ball hair, but these guys probably don't have enough hairs on their balls because they can't grow beards anyway. So I mean, I don't know where they're getting this hair from.
Well, they wax, right? So what they're doing is they don't want hair anywhere else in their body, but they want this manly beard.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's ass hair.
Yeah, like the brownie towel guy is pissed, you know? Like, yeah. he's like shit. I don't know. I saw that headline and I was like, it's not something we would typically talk about on the show, but I just felt like it was worth it. It really bugged me. I'm like, really? And, you know, and I guess, you know, from the female aspect, hey, we love implants. I mean, I have no problem with implants. You know what I mean? That's just caught like we see it here. So yeah, I'm sure there's some women out there that are like, I have no problem. Like, get that beard up, you know, thicken it up a little bit there, buddy. If it costs you $6,000, you know, these tits were $8,000, you know, so let's thicken that beard up a little bit, huh? Another headline I saw, it says, what's the worst place to be stung by a bee? How about anywhere? How about that? Short story. Being stung by a bee sucks. There's no reason to read that article. What the hell? Where's the worst place to be stung at? Anywhere. It sucks being stung by a bee, especially if you're allergic. You know. But anyway, here's a story, and this kind of is indicative of the times we live in with technology and cell phones. That'll be the first time I use my cell phone tons for Twitter and, you know, all kinds of different things. But I think there's definitely a generation gap there. You look at the younger generation. This is a story that obviously dictates that very well. 16-year-old girl in England drops her phone down a storm drain. This is in Dover, England. Instead of just being like, I lost my cell phone, I'll file an insurance claim or do all the things you need to do to replace it. No. She's like, I'm in the middle of a conversation here on my cell phone. I'm going into the storm drain to get my cell phone because I cannot bear to continue my day without my cell phone. So what is what happens to Ellie, the 16-year-old in Dover, England? She gets stuck in the storm drain. So now, on her way out of the storm drain, she's stuck halfway through. Still doesn't have, she's, her cell phone's gone. So now she's distraught. Oh my God, I don't even have anyone to text right now. You know? And stuck in the storm drain. So, obviously the rescue crew had to come and rescue her. They said that she was more interested in whether or not they could actually help her find her cell phone as opposed to getting her out. They wanted them to find the cell phone first before getting her out of the storm drain. Okay. Look. No, you should not have a cell phone at this point. You should be banned for, if you are going to put yourself in danger for your cell phone, you should not be allowed to have a cell phone for 2 years. Your contract should have to expire. You should have a 2-year agreement of not using a cell phone. Okay. That's unbelievable. Like I'm at work the other night and I get off work and there's these, two girls sitting at this little side table here. And, they're probably early 20s, I'd guess. And they're both together, and they're not talking to one another. They're both on their cell phones at the table. They show up together at a social venue. And they're not looking at one another, not talking to one another. They're on their cell phones. I see it all the time. It's really, really bizarre. Now, I don't mind, checking your phone or, hey, I got a couple messages, give me a moment, but I mean, this went on. I mean, this is a good 45 minutes. This is craziness. I'm like, you're going to have to charge your phone before you're done. But, again, just kind of the sign of the times, I guess, moving on. This is, kind of pick things up a little bit, something. This is the phallic fest in Japan. Only in Japan can we have the penis festival, the festival of the steel phallus. It's hard. The phallus, I mean, not me personally right now, but, look, April 6th, every year they have this celebration, penis and fertility, festival, again, festival of the steel phallus. People, parade around in giant phallic shaped, penises down the streets in Japan, and they suck on penis lollipops, they buy penis memorabilia, penis sculptures, penis candles, penis drinks, wooden carved giant penises that women get on top of and ride around while sucking on a penis lollipop. You guessed it, it's Penis Fest, the festival of the steel phallus. That's classic. I mean, it really is. I guess the whole thing now is to promote safe practice on fundraising for HIV prevention. So it doesn't go without at least a good cause there. They've been doing it, I guess, for a long, long time there. So, obviously, prevention of sexually transmitted diseases as well. But on the pictures and stuff in the festival show, I didn't see one thing that actually would symbolize a safe sex thing. There wasn't condoms or there wasn't, it was just penis this, penis that, put this frozen popsicle penis in your mouth. Hey, let's get a group of girls together to suck on these lollipops. You know what I mean? That was basically the picture. So, but doing it for prevention here, have a ice cold. Enjoy. Here's another interesting story I found. It's just really, really hilarious to me. People just do really dumb things when they're really, really wasted or, this guy, Brian McCurran, he's a Notre Dame college student, allegedly broke into a massage parlor, devouring a stockpile of Hot Pockets and nearly causing a serious fire. Okay, first off, why does a massage parlor have a stockpile of Hot Pockets? What the hell is going on at this massage parlor? They're like, would you like the nice honey cream facial? Would you like the nice hot oil bath? And, oh, by the way, we do have some refreshing Hot Pockets for you as well. Like, what is going on here? Okay, we'll get back to Brian in a second. Why the hell is there Hot Pockets at the massage parlor? And I love the name of it, Therapeutic Indulgence. Now, I've never personally been to a massage parlor, but if I were to go to a massage parlor, I'm pretty sure it would be titled Therapeutic Indulgence, okay? I guess Brian admitted to police that he was smoking synthetic marijuana and also drinking very, very heavily. He broke in by throwing a potted plant through the window and then used some type of hammer or something to break down the wall and got in and wrecked the place, broke lamps, mirrors, front furniture, spa equipment. I don't know if he messed with the warm lube or not. I'm guessing he didn't. He did find the Hot Pockets. I guess he was just really hungry. He ended up spraying the fire extinguisher throughout the building as well. The dude was so wasted that the fire alarm went off because he heated up a bunch of macaroni and cheese in this antique oven, I guess they had in the building, and passed out, obviously. The macaroni and cheese and everything was still in the oven and caught fire. I'm still drawn to with the whole Hot Pocket thing. And I couldn't think of anyone else to better explain Hot Pocket than Jim Gaffigan.
I'm moving a little slow tonight. I had a Hot Pocket for dinner. Good to see I'm not the only white trash here. I buy the Hot Pockets. I go in grocery stores. I'm like, yeah, I'll get these. I've never eaten a Hot Pocket and then afterwards been, I'm glad I ate that. I'm always like, I'm going to die. I paid for that? Did I eat it or rub it on my face? My back hurts. Ow. I was looking at a box of Hot Pockets. They have a warning printed on the sign. Said, warning, you just bought Hot Pockets. Hope you're drunk or heading home to a trailer. You hillbilly, enjoy the next NASCAR event. Hot Pockets.
Yeah, NASCAR. This NASCAR event is brought to you by Hot Pocket. Like, I guess it would have made sense if, like, he ate Hot Pockets first and then went on a rampage. Like, he was like, you know what? I got really drunk and then I ate like a half a box of Hot Pockets and I broke into Therapeutic Indulgence looking for a massage. You know, that would make more sense to me. Speaking of, I'm told these are unrelated stories, but probably have a lot to do with maybe eating too many Hot Pockets. Patricia Ann Jameson, 49, was arrested earlier this month after deputies said she had taken a crap in an elevator at the St. Louis County Courthouse in Fort Pierre, Florida. Hot Pocket. I guess this happened on afternoon of March 7th. Security staff noticed a pile of shit in the corner of the elevator. Miss Jameson, I'll use the term Miss loosely, who is actively pending cases in the county, was the last person to come out of the elevator after the reported fecal activity. Security footage showed Jameson walking into the elevator and appearing to pull her pants down and back up towards the interior elevator buttons, consistent with someone using the bathroom. Footage also allegedly showed a woman fiddling with her shirt and pants after exiting the elevator. I guess this, she's being charged, obviously, with more crimes. Defecating in public, I guess, you know. I mean, I guess if you got to go, you got to go, Hot Pocket. I mean, like, what? I mean, really? I mean, she's 49, this woman. She's 49 years old. She's obviously in some trouble with the law, unfortunately, you know, and they probably stick it to her real good. So she's like, you know what? I've had enough of this place, you know. She's basically saying, you know what? They told me not to fuck this shit, but I'm fucking this shit, you know? And she just took a shit in the elevator. She's going to drop one out. You know, hopefully it was like one of those ones that's kind of clean, you know? She didn't have to wipe too much, but if she's fidgeting with her pants and stuff, it's probably a little messy, you know? She's probably, you know, kind of smeared it all up, you know? That's kind of an image that I'm happy to paint for everybody tonight. But, yeah, Hot Pocket. Moving on, you know what? Drunk driving is never a good idea for anybody. And some of you are going, oh boy, here we go. Story time with Ryan. No. No story time with Ryan, but it crossed my mind about sharing an interesting one with you, but I will not. But anyway, so this guy gets pulled over for drunk driving. He's 21 years old, Oregon. And he's arrested in a shirt that says drunk as shit. And that's his mugshot. And the dude's not even, like, sad about it. He's, like, in his mugshot. It's absolutely hysterical. He's got this shirt on. It says drunk as shit. And he's just so shit-faced that he's smiling. According to this, he blew a 0.106. A 0.1. Dude, you are drunk as shit. Holy crap. Like, I mean, I think like 0.2, is it 0.2, 0.4? I guess it probably 0.2 is probably legally drunk, right? 0.4 is probably, regardless of who you are, you are drunk, you know? 0.1 is, you know, that's like borderline alcohol poisoning, I would assume, you know? Unbelievable. Moral of the story, don't drink and drive. Just don't do it. And if you are going to do it, make sure you have the drunk as shit shirt on, I guess, and hopefully you don't kill anybody. Holy shit. Just moving on to music news. You know, this past week, and we didn't talk about it last week, and maybe we should have, but, you know, we ended up talking about Dave Bricky and Guar and stuff, but man, it's hard to believe. It's been 20 years since Kurt Cobain has passed away. We'll talk about this in a moment. You know, obviously, you know, Nirvana, not a long history, only three studio albums and the Unplugged album, which was, you know, brilliantly done, the 20th anniversary, but there's a film supposed to be coming out called Soaked in Bleach. Which is being done, basically, you know, interviewing in, you know, people who were around that time, the, police chief, for, forensic science in the area, police chief in the Seattle, PD, Norman Staper, was quoted, in the trailer. I would tell you right now, if I were the chief today, I would open this investigation. I would reopen this investigation. Soaked in Bleach, kind of a docra drama, is what they're calling it, documentary slash drama, about Kurt Cobain and his, quote unquote suicide, not really being a suicide at all. Tentatively released sometime in 2014. I'm very interested in this film. I hope it does come out. Be interesting to hear, the take of, you know, the personal private investigator, Tom Grant, who was hired by Courtney Love to find her missing husband. However, Grant shares a number of red flags that kept popping up while dealing with Courtney Love, leading to the investigator believing something was awry. Now, look, if you hire a private guest investigator for yourself and that private investigator thinks you're hiding something, that is a red flag. I'm sorry. Those guys are you know, guns for hire, right? I mean, so if you're hiring a private investigator to investigate something for you and they think your behavior is suspicious on why you hired them, that is a big time red flag. And I'd be interesting to hear what that guy has to say. And I'm sure that Courtney Love will do whatever she can to make sure that doesn't happen. That's just my take on it. And also on that day, April 5th, gosh, it's been 12 years since Lane Staley from Alice in Chains died as well. So two musicians, obviously with different scenarios. I don't think there's any doubt on Lane's death and what the cause was there, unfortunately. Kurt, you know, obviously struggling with some demons. You go back and listen to those Nirvana songs, you know, and you hear some of the lyrics and, you know, maybe didn't recognize it or maybe appreciate as much at a younger age as maybe you do now that you're a little older. But, you know, 20 years is a long time to kind of look back and reflect on some of those songs that, you know, kind of caught your attention as a youth. You look back on now and realize what a tortured individual was. And I think every year we've kind of talked about this on the show. Mike, if you want to, you know, add anything, feel free, man.
I don't even know what to add. I mean, it's a shame. It's a huge loss. I guess you could say you could go back and you might notice some things, but I mean, he wrote a song called Lithium. He was what, bipolar, right?
I believe so. And I think if he would have stayed on Lithium, maybe he'd be around today as opposed to heroin. But yeah, that's just my take on it. But
if he didn't kill himself, then a lot of those lyrics are not necessarily so haunting, are they?
Yeah, maybe not.
If you look at it from that perspective.
You know, I think that still he was a tortured soul, no doubt about it, with the heroin use and everything. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of conspiracy theories out there, and I'd be interested to see what this film uncovers. I don't know. At this point, it's been 20 years. You know, so there's a part of me that should say, you know what, maybe it should just lay to rest. But if there is an injustice that was done, then maybe, you know, the rest of his family, his daughter, deserve have a right to know that, you know? So, I don't know what they're taking on Dave Grohl and Chris Novoselic and all those guys associated with him and Kurt, you know, through all those years, what their take is on that per se. But be interesting to see if this film comes out, Soaked in Bleach, and, you know, if it sheds any light at all, you know. But we'll move on from that. You know, kind of a bummer to start the music news segment, but definitely worth noting. In Lane, of course, 12 years now too. So just very, very talented. Another very, very talented individual that just unfortunately could not get the needle out of his arm, you know. So if you see a heroin dealer, man, just fucking report them. Get them off the street, you know. Just ruining people, man. All right, a little bit happier news. Dave Grohl, I guess it's really happy. This is kind of ridiculous. Dave Grohl from in Warren, Ohio. He kind of grew up there. His grandparents lived there. Dave Grohl Alley is a little area in Warren, Ohio, where they've, you know, dedicated to Dave Grohl, and there's some artwork there. Well, apparently somebody has spray painted and graffitied and defaced the you know, musical, you know, montage there. They're looking at obviously finding out who it is and replacing it and repairing Dave Grohl Alley. So, you know, something like that, you know, like, you know, a small hometown that doesn't get a lot of great press, you know, or doesn't get any press. The only press they get is, hey, we did this really great thing for a guy who, you know, who kind of, you know, grew up in a, you know, not so great area, you know, as far as money standards are concerned and, you know, and poverty and all those different things, and kind of made it out, and obviously he's done very, very well for himself, and we're gonna you know make this tribute for him. And some jackass, you know, probably has no idea who Dave Grohl is, defaces it because he's, you know, he just doesn't have a clue, you know. But also Taylor Hawkins from Fighters has a new side project called The Birds of Satan, set to be released April 15th. Also a bunch of guest appearances by Dave Grohl and Pat Smear, Drew Hester, all make cameos on that record as well. Again, Taylor Hawkins is actually singing in the band The Birds of Satan, again out April the 15th. Theory of a Dead Man are getting ready to unveil their new album, which is going to come out, I believe, in July. July 8th is when the new album comes out. It's titled Savages. This is a snippet of their new track right here. Very good stuff right there from Theory of a Dead Man. It's been a little while now. 2011 was the last album that came out. So I've been working on it a little while, taking some time off. Look for those guys to hit the road hardcore too if they've been off that long. I look forward to hearing some new stuff from those guys. Kiss is seeking input for their 40th anniversary celebration. I have some input. Right. I have some input for you. Retire. How about just not do it? How about just stop already? Okay. How about you reintroduce the Kiss caskets and go lay down in them? I don't know. I mean, Jesus. My gosh, man. Just put an end to it already. Please. Gosh. Yeah, my gosh. Just no. How was that for input? Kiss, Christ. The Pretty Reckless just announced a batch of U.S. tour dates. The band will hit the road for about a month and a half across the U.S. Before heading overseas this summer. Fans hoping to see the Pretty Reckless live this year at the Snow Corps. Unfortunately, singer Taylor Munson was hit with walking pneumonia and laryngitis. Luckily, Munson is back into top form, and the Pretty Reckless are got a couple of good shows coming up, which includes an April 23rd performance at the Revolver Golden Gods Awards, which should be very interesting. The album Going to Hell debuted at number 5 on the Billboard Top 200 and is the number 1 rock hit, Heaven Knows. And if you haven't seen the video for Heaven Knows, I suggest you do so. It's a pretty amazing video. Taylor Munson sells it perfectly, as only she can do. Good that she's back to health, and I'm looking forward to, I really love the first album. I really do. I'm looking forward to, you know, Going to Hell and hearing the rest of it. You know, really good stuff from that band. Let's take a look at the top movies at the box office this week. You know what? Before we do the top 10, I feel like we would do a disservice here if we don't talk about Mickey Rooney. Mickey Rooney, legendary actor, has been entertaining since the 1920s, passed away of natural causes at the age of 93, known for his bubbly, eccentric personality. Rooney was a guy who left it all out there and was entertaining pretty much all the way up until his passing. Most recently, he stole every scene in The Night of the Museum. He had small part and the memorable part in The Muppets. Latest movie. He was also filming a role for the upcoming Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So he really never stopped entertaining, even through, you know, performing over 80 years. He received honors at the Oscars for his 50 years of memorable film performances. The last time he was nominated for an Academy Award was 1983, which is over 31 years ago. You know, what can you say? A guy who, was always entertaining when you saw him on a talk show, or even if you didn't really know who he was, you know, you see him on a talk show with Jay Leno or something like that, or actually even Carson back in the day. And, you know, a guy that just always entertained. You always see him in a little cameo doing comedy bits and, you know, serious roles from time to time, a little bit more comedy stuff as he got older. Always a pleasure to see him on those shows. He's always really funny and articulate. You know, obviously, you know, lived a very, very rich life. He died, with his family by his side at the age of 93, Mickey Rooney. You know, obviously, you know, feel like we can't talk about the top 10 movies without talking about Mickey Rooney passing. But taking the top 10 at the box office this week, Nonstop at 1.7 million, Need for Speed at 1.8, Sabotage at 2 million, Mr. Peabody and Sherman at 5.1, The Grand Budapest Hotel at 6.1 million, Muppets Most Wanted 6.1 million, God's Not Dead at 7.7 million, Divergent, which I heard is not very, very good. Just what I've heard, 12.9 million, Noah, 17 million, and no surprise here. Number one at the box office, Captain America, The Winter Soldier, $95 million in the opening weekend. And also the largest grossing opening weekend for a film in April ever. Now, kind of put that in perspective. The movie 300, Rise of an Empire, which has been out 5 weeks, has made $105 million. Captain America Winter Soldier, and its opening weekend, which is 3 days, not even a holiday weekend, just a regular old weekend in April, $95 million. Wow. It looks really, really great. Looking forward to seeing it at some point, and obviously doing a review on the show. I'll tell you what, enough with this. Let's jam Ryan Neff from Miss Maya is going to be joining us. I'm really excited to have him on. But first, let's hear a track. This is off the album Rise of the Lion. It is gone here on Revelator.
Make this pain go away. to make this pain go away.
So what about me when you're gone?
That is Gone here on Revelator, the band Miss May. I am joined right now by Ryan Neff, bass player, backup vocalist from the band. Ryan, hey, thanks for hanging out, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man, no problem.
Well, you guys got a lot going on right now, man. The new album, Rise of the Lion, said to come out April 29th, so I know you guys are stoked about that. A bunch of tours and everything going on. Obviously, we'll talk about that, but I want to kind of get into, you recorded this album with Terry Date, a guy who's been in the industry a long, long time, worked with, you know, White Zombie, Pantera, Deftones, you know, the list goes on there. What was the impact of working with him, one, musically and also vocally for you guys?
Yeah, good old Terry, he's a good buddy of ours, never thought I'd say that. we didn't know who we were going to record with, and when we were working on the list of potential producers that we could work with, his name was in the list, and we thought that was, you know, way out of our league, so we were like, well, you know, we'll give it a shot, we'll reach out to him, and he was interested in doing the record, so we chose to work with him, and we showed up with, instrumentally, it was pretty much done. We worked really hard on the pre-pro, but when we got there, the big thing was vocals, man. He just was, we wanted an organic, raw record like he's done so many times, and we wanted it to just be a classic, simple metal record, you know, just the five of us, instruments, that's it. And that's how we did it. And we did everything so old school, and it was so much fun. And the whole time you just got to listen to great stories about every band you can imagine.
No, I bet, man. I'm sure he's got some pretty crazy stories. Is there any that you could share with us that kind of you were like, oh, man, I can't believe that happened, or that's so cool, or, you know, one of those kind of things?
I had a picture of... He had a picture of Eminem passed out in a vocal booth one time, which is pretty funny. nice. He said when he was working with Limp Bizkit a lot, Vern, I believe, is it Vern Troyer that plays Mini-Me?
Yeah.
He was like at the studio all the time. Like he saw that guy a bunch of different times. He said that just back in the... Back with Pantera and Limp Bizkit and Deftones and stuff, I can only imagine the crazy stuff that he saw. The coolest part, like being a nerd and being in the band, was just pointing out a part from a record you liked that he did, and then hearing how he did it. It was real crazy. Just doing crazy stuff like using the talkback box outside the door of the studio for like screamed vocal parts, like going outside with a microphone and tracking them just for an effect. It was pretty cool. Pretty cool time. I think I punished him about the Astro Creep 2000 record by White Zombie probably at least once a week, asking him questions about it.
I can imagine, you know, pick a track out and be like, hey, you know, and just hear the stories and, you know, obviously, you know, just to hear that inside knowledge of a guy that, you know, typically maybe you wouldn't necessarily get, you know, it's got to be very cool. I'm sure you... The first song we heard, Gone, is a great track, and we're going to hear another track, Echoes, which we'll talk about in a moment. But obviously, you guys are gearing up, you know, playing a bunch of shows here this spring and summer. You're doing the Up Close and Personal headlining tour in the U.S. Now, what's it like for you guys to play new songs in front of crowds? Is that something that you guys kind of get nervous about at all?
Yeah, it's almost, you know, even though the records are usually only 2 years apart, it feels like every time we play a new song, we forget how strange it is. We just added the song you're talking about, Gone. We did a tour with Killswitch Engage and Trivium in the UK and Europe back in January, I believe. And we had Gone in the set list the whole time. And definitely the first 2 days or so, we were just like, oh my God, this. Right before you get to that song, you're so stressed out. You're like, I know we're gonna mess it up. Even though you're not going to, but you know, you always get the jitters when you're throwing in a new song, especially when it's not your show either. You know, you're doing the support tour thing where you got 15 minutes to get your stuff on stage, 15 to get it off. You know, you're rushing, and it's all somebody else's fans there rocking out for you. So it's a stressful thing, but at the same time, after 2 years of playing the same songs, you're so stoked to get those new songs out there. That's why I can't wait for those headlining shows. We get that coveted headliner length set list where we can play whatever we want. You know, we get however long we want to play.
No, I imagine that's probably a relief to kind of get the headliner before, obviously, you're going to join the Mayhem Festival in July. But as far as set list goes, your fourth record now, do you and Levi, or is it kind of collective effort with the band as far as set list is concerned? Do you guys kind of mix it up every night? Or
yeah, it didn't used to be difficult because, you know, we didn't have very many songs. And we noticed all of a sudden on that Killswitch Trivium tour, how short a 30-minute set time actually is now that we have four records with material to choose from. So last time it was a bit of a battle between all of us trying to figure out what new songs make it in. You know, you can't cut out all the old songs. You still got all those fans who supported you, so they're there to see some old songs, especially with the record not out yet. So it's a battle. I think a lot of it comes down to, like, the what are the most popular songs each record, which is easy to tell when you know the record's been out for a couple of years. But for these new ones, it's really hard because, you know, the singles we chose for this record, Echoes and Gone, are totally different. You know, they're very different moods and different speed songs. So one song might work on one tour, might not work on another. So I can see us now turning this into a pretty heated debate, figuring out what songs are going into the list.
Yeah, you guys would be out there, you know, flipping coins, maybe playing a little beer pong or something, you know, picking songs out. You know?
maybe making some CeeLo bets over what songs are gonna get some money involved.
There you go, man. Now, the Mayhem Festival starting in July. Man, I saw the lineup. I was like, man, this is a ridiculous lineup, man. Korn, Avenged Sevenfold, Asking Alexandria, and a personal favorite of mine. Also, it's funny, we were talking about the Ohio connection here. Mushroomhead, obviously, on that tour. Huge fan of those guys, you know, growing up in Northeast Ohio. But how stoked are you guys to be a part of that bill alone and just, you know, tour the summer with bands that have, you know, obviously been at it for a little while?
It's exciting. For us, it feels like the culmination of the hard year of work we put around at the end of that last record cycle. You know, you always got that first year of the album where it's exciting and it's brand new, but with so much stuff out there now and so many great bands and, you know, the internet spreading music so easily to people and finding new stuff, that second year of the record, you know, you're out there, you're touring, you're working your butt off. And we were doing it touring with a lot of different kind of bands than we've ever toured with. You know, we were out there pushing at heart to a new fan base, you know, playing with Five Finger Death Punch and Trivium and Killswitch Engage was a really big one for us. And when we were doing those tours, you know, we had it in the back of our minds, like we wanted a slot on Mayhem, you know, but you don't get a slot on a tour like that, you know, that only has a certain amount of bands. And there are so many big bands out there. You got to earn your spot before you can get on it. So it feels like all that hard work and those great tours that we did last year are paying off and giving us the opportunity to do such a cool tour. I mean, like you said, look at the lineup. I'm going to be a fan rocking out as much as anybody who buys a ticket. You'll probably be watching your favorite bands and you'll notice my bald head poking out on side stage, hanging out there watching bands every day.
Yeah, I mean, that lineup's ridiculous. I'm in Nashville. I'm like, man, I was like, the nearest show, I think, is Atlanta. So I think I'm going to have to make the four-hour trek, man. I've been a fan of Korn for a long, long time. Avenged Sevenfold, those guys have been at it for a while. And like I said, you know, Mushroomhead, one of my personal favorites. And anytime
so cool,
I get a chance
man.
To see those guys.
Ohio band, you know. So it's so, like you were saying before we started talking, it's so crazy how many people you'll meet from Ohio.
Yeah, it really is, man. What's the biggest challenge for you guys? Obviously, you've played a lot of festival shows, playing, you know, obviously the Mayhem Festival. Do you have a preference as far as playing, like, the headliner, like the club venue show, or is there a kind of a give and take on both sides there?
Yeah, it really just depends what you're going for at that point in your career. I mean, you can't say anything bad about the great opportunity that those awesome outdoor festivals give you. You know, you're going to play for a huge chunk of your own fan base, and you're probably going to get lucky and catch, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 extra people minimum who are just walking by who have never seen you before, you know, and that's always great. But when you do your own headlining tour in a venue and stuff, you know, you get the production and it's your show and it's so exciting for your fans who are buying a ticket, and you get that long set list. It's a give and take for both, but I think it just depends. It depends what you got going on in your career, you know. You know, we did Warped Tour twice in a row, 2011, 2012, and we wouldn't have grown at the rate we did had we not done a tour like that. So they're both really beneficial, and more importantly, they're both really fun. So I'm happy to do either. You stick me on either one, and I won't complain.
I think that's the right attitude, man. You guys have been out there, you know, kind of pound the pavement, rolling in the dirt, you know, and obviously it's going to pay off this summer with a lot of these tours, man. So congratulations to you guys, man. Just keep up the good work, you know?
Yeah, thank you very much. We are having a blast. That is for sure. We are out here to have a great time and give a good show for everybody out there headbanging with us. And Mayhem is definitely going to be a good time. There's no question about that.
Yeah, man, that tour is going to be crazy, man. We close out with the song Echoes we kind of alluded to earlier. Really a different track for you guys in its entirety. I mean, something, you know, vocally different, musically different for you guys. What was the tracking like with Terry on that, you know, as far as the vocals, you know, at least your part of vocally? Was he just trying to push you guys vocally to do something different and kind of, you know, arrangements and those type of things?
Yeah, the thing he does for us is we're our biggest critics, and we're definitely our biggest enemy in all aspects of our career. You know, if we're going to have a problem live, it's going to be because we didn't prep well enough. And if we're going to have a problem with anything, it's going to be us stressing ourselves out. And that's the sort of thing that we will do with these different tracks like Echoes. Because we've been writing, you know, in the box we set for ourselves, the really tight confines of the metalcore box, you know. And when we wrote that song and we were doing the vocals for it, you know, it's weird when you look back at the song and you listen back. And the big thing for us with Terry was he was there. When Terry gives you the nod or he cues in while you're working and while you're tracking to tell you that he loves the part and that it's going well, your confidence immediately is there, you know, and you're not worried so much anymore. Like, man, is this, because if somebody's going to know that a track sounds great and a track is heavy, and that's the thing, you know, Echoes is still a heavy track, but it's heavy in a completely different way than we've ever done. And without somebody like Terry there to, you know, keep our confidence up and keep us moving through those songs, who knows if they would have even made the record. You know, they might have just got tossed. We might have just said like, oh, no one will ever like a track like this from us. But with someone like that, you know, steering the ship and producing the record, you can bring the confidence to actually bring a track out like that.
Well, I think it shows your guys' growth as a band, too, and also in the writing aspect as well. So I'll tell you what, man, it's been a pleasure talking with you, man. Hopefully come back again sometime. We'll set something up and after the summer, man. Best of luck to you. And we close out with Echoes here on Revelator, man. Ryan, thank you very much.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Miss May, I hear on Revelator, and that is the new track, Echo. Really good stuff, and thanks for Ryan F. for stopping by and donating some time. Best of luck to those guys on Mayhem Festival this year, and also doing a little headline tour through April and May as well. So definitely head on over, check the site out. New album, again, comes out April 29th, Rise of the Lion. For more information about this particular episode of Revelator, head on over to omnes.tv. Again, that's omnes.tv. Click on episode number 53, I believe, right? Gosh, I'm losing count already? Is that 54. What we're doing here?
54.
Episode 54. Click on 53, too. That was a good one as well. The guys from Falling Through April, really good dudes at North Carolina. So I also find us on Facebook as well, facebook.com/omnes.tv. Again, that's omnes.tv. You can find me, Ryan, on Twitter, Ryan_unsigned. Sometimes I just tweet nonsense, and sometimes I don't. So there you go. That's kind of how it rolls. NCAA basketball. The championship game ended up being Kentucky versus UConn. Nobody had that on their bracket. I guarantee a number 7 seed and number 8 seed, two teams that were pretty much average and underachieved all year long, end up playing for the whole thing. Wisconsin gave Kentucky all they could handle, and I don't think that Kentucky had anything left. Because that Wisconsin game probably should have been the title game. That was a fantastic basketball game. Florida, I don't know what happened with Florida there. They absolutely laid an egg. They couldn't shoot for nothing. Credit UConn, their defense. Kevin Ollie, the new coach at UConn, fantastic job. He was a great ball player. Was an okay pro. He played, was kind of a journeyman in the NBA. Played in the D-League, Euroleague, played with the Cavs and a few other teams here and there. But always a professional guy, a guy that you didn't have a problem signing when he was in the league because you knew you were going to get a professional stand-up guy who was going to take it seriously. He was a good locker room guy. He's taken that approach and applied it to UConn with some talent there. And he just won a national title in his second year coaching at UConn. That is a tall order to live up to. Congratulations to him and that team. What I don't understand, though, is I lived in Columbus for a number of years, so, we've had our fair share of couch burnings and, celebratory riots. I guess I don't understand the riot thing, burning stuff when you win a title. But then again, I am a Cleveland sports fan, so I can't really describe to you what that feels like. I don't know, because we never win any titles, so I can't tell you what I'd do, But I do know this. Don't set fire to your own stuff. Don't set fire to someone else's stuff. Go to a beer, or go to a bar, drink some beer, have sex with a girl who wants to have sex with you. Celebrate, have some fun, right? I don't know. That's about all I can really say about that. Like, I guess I don't understand that either, I remember, seeing on TV as a kid, we won the title. Let's go pillage. It's pillage time. Yeah. I don't understand that. Like, let's go rob Radio Shack. Yeah, mother effer. We won the title. No, dude, you didn't win the title, dude. You just sat home and drank beer and watched it. Like, you didn't win the title. Like, we won, dude. No, man, you watched them win. But that's cool. I mean, you can get into it. I'm a sports fan. I get into it too, but, I don't know. I'm not going to set anything on fire. Maybe I'll light some fireworks or something. How about that? I might do that. If the Cleveland Browns win a Super Bowl, don't laugh. I know there's people out there hearing me right now. If the Cleveland Browns win a Super Bowl, there's like, 6 people left. I might want to light something on fire. I might have to just make sure that it's not frozen. Is it frozen outside? What's going on here? Like, the Browns won the Super Bowl? What? Again, I don't know how you're supposed to react, but I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to light fire to shit. That's all I know. The NBA playoffs are getting ready to gear up here. Gearing up? Yeah, that's what's going to happen. Closing down the season. The Indiana Pacers are starting to worry me a little bit. I thought they were kind of a favorite coming out of the East. Down the stretch, they've struggled quite a bit. So we'll see if they can kind of right the ship there. The Miami Heat are right there. I mean, they look really, really good. Kevin Durant, if this guy doesn't win the MVP this year, I don't know. I don't know what you got to do to win the MVP. If you break a record that Michael Jordan held in basketball for scoring 25 points a game consecutive for 40 games in a row, you break Michael Jordan's streak of that, you should win the MVP. MVP. That is phenomenal. That is a feat that hasn't been done in 50 years in basketball. Okay? Put that in perspective for a second. Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, LeBron James, Charles Barkley, Karl Malone. You know, I mean, the list of all the greats you could think of, you know, that have played in the last, you know, 30 years alone. Michael Jordan, Kevin Durant. You know how hard it is to score 25 points a game in the NBA and to do it for 40 games in a row? Wow. Unbelievable, man. Dude has played lights out all year long. Clear-cut MVP, in my opinion. Probably going to win the scoring title as well this year. He's been fantastic. And the team is right there in the hunt. You know, they're number two seed, I think, in the West right now. The real contenders, I think, at this point are Indiana and Miami in the East, Clippers, San Antonio, and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Those are the teams I think that can legitimately win an NBA title. The rest of them, maybe, a lot of it would have to go their way. But those five teams, I think, are the only teams that you're looking at competing for an NBA title. And we'll cover the playoffs a little bit more as we get into it. You know, I'm a huge basketball fan. Baseball started as well. There's only like 150 some odd games to go before it really starts to really count. So, All-Star break, we'll poke in on a little baseball here and there. It is the 40th anniversary of Hank Aaron breaking Babe Ruth's record for the home run title. So congratulations to Hank Aaron. And so there you go. That's it. That is a wrap. Again, thanks to Miss May and Ryan Neff for stopping by. Best luck to those guys. Mike, wonderful job as always. And thank you, the listeners, for checking us out every week. We appreciate you. Hey, it seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so, everybody.
This was episode 54. Miss May I Have Your Hot Pocket. For show notes or links to topics discussed on this episode of Rebel Letter, or to experience previous episodes, head on over to omnes.tv. That's omnes.tv, and click on Rebel Letter. Thanks for listening.